My guest, John Fairchild, is considered one of the most powerful and most feared people in the fashion world. Fairchild's grandfather founded Women's Wear Daily at the turn of the century. John Fairchild took it over from his father in 1967 and changed it from a trade journal into what Time magazine once described as a lively, gossipy, and bitchy newspaper of manners, trends, and scandal, a must-read for anyone in the fashion business and for members of the social set who want to know what's up and what's in. Fairchild has turned designers into celebrities, but he also has a reputation for going for the jugular in fashion reviews and fashion gossip. John Fairchild is the CEO of Fairchild Publications and vice president of Capital Cities Broadcasting. After his company merged with Capital Cities, he launched the fashion magazines W and M. Fairchild's new book about the fashion world is called Chic Savages. I asked him to compare the fashion world now to what it was like in the 60s when he took over Women's Wear Daily.
Well, the big change is that fashion has really become big, big business. I mean, when you consider you have a designer like Ralph Lauren who's doing something like $2.6 billion a year and a Calvin Klein who's doing close to $2 billion a year, that's where the big change. But the way it works hasn't changed, really. Because basically, new ideas in fashion, and there's nothing, I'm putting quotes around new, there really are no new ideas in fashion because it goes back to what we've seen before. But the ones who start so-called ideas, which everybody copies, come from Europe. And those ideas are basically starting in still high fashion, expensive clothes. And it's eventually watered down to all levels. It goes as far away as China. Like you can see a collar on a Saint Laurent dress copied in China. So basically the way it works has not changed one bit.
Why has fashion become more big business than it used to be?
Well, I suppose because they have developed a very clever device of licensing their names on everything. For example, Yves Saint Laurent, Japan, has his names on doormats. Pierre Cardin in Paris has his name on plumbing equipment. And they get a royalty on this, so you can imagine how far it's gone. I mean, Yves Saint Laurent has his name on cigarettes. So this is where the real money's coming in, and it's a lot of money.
Let's talk about how the fashion press has changed. How did you define Women's Wear Daily when you took it over differently from how your grandfather defined it when he started it back in, I think it was 1910?
Well, first, I've been very lucky to inherit something that was started by my grandfather, who actually started in Chicago selling information about textiles on a horse and buggy, and all the pricing information of cloth. That's how our business started, and now it's grown into a business of 1,200 people. And my father really built Women's Wear Daily into what it is today. My role, or our role, I should say, is, because we all work together as a team, several of us, when I came back in the early 50s, was to try to make something that which was more of a very staid, reliable, conservative business or trade paper into something that was exciting and everybody wanted to read.
You say that when you started reviewing fashion shows and sending out reporters to review them, you wanted them reviewed like movie reviews. What's the difference between the kind of review you were interested in of fashion collections and the kind of reviews that were being written when you started?
Well, when I started, we used to go to a fashion show and we'd sit there and give endless descriptions of clothes. I mean, there's nothing more boring than watching a parade of clothes or endless words about written about clothes, whether the shirt, the collar is this way or that way. So what we did do was relate the fashion to people and to the designers themselves. The designers, for example, on 7th Avenue never came out of their... They were locked up in the back room. As a personality, they did not exist. And we were the first ones to really make the designer into, well, I'd call today, some of them are as famous as movie stars and rock stars. And we brought them out of the that back room where they were sketching away. But to answer your question specifically, it's very simple that we have a big responsibility, and so do the other fashion writers of the New York Times, that people read what we say before they put down thousands and thousands of dollars buying a designer's clothes. So when we look at it, whether we're right or wrong, we sometimes have a critical point of view, we all do, of who has a good collection versus the other person, or whose clothes are better than the others, and what are the trends. So obviously the stores and the people who buy clothes do look at that, then they make their own decisions.
It's a very insular world in a way, like most specialized worlds are. But I'm thinking that, you know, you cover the designers and their new lines, and those same designers also advertise in your magazine. So I wonder what goes through your mind when you say something really negative about a new show, wondering if you'll be losing their advertising dollars when you do it. I know one of the things you're famous for in your magazines is printing very negative things, so I realize this hasn't held you back a lot, but I'm sure that's something you have to contend with.
I've got to go back to what the first important questions you asked me. How do we cover watching? How do we arrive at a conclusion about a show? Well, we talk to other people in the room. We talk to the people themselves who are going to buy the clothes that are there. We are influenced by what they say. We talk to other members of the press. You realize that when you see a show in Paris, there are sometimes 2,000 people under one tent from all over the world watching what's going on in fashion. You can imagine 2,000 people there. And in that room, maybe out of that 2,000, there might be 50 or 60 people who really will determine what is bought. And they are the opinion makers. And we try to seek some of them out. And when we're basically reporters, and that's the way I began, and I hope I'll end up being that, always a reporter, we go and look at something isolated. We aren't thinking about who's an advertiser and whose feelings we're going to hurt. We just have to report. That's our responsibility. And we have lost advertising. For example, in W, which is our consumer publication, we have done an in-and-out list, and we said a certain Swiss watch was out. We lost one of our biggest advertisers. Plus, all the other Swiss manufacturers of watches canceled, too, because they all got together. So I don't say we're fearless. I say we have to all eat, but we are quite pure when it comes to writing about fashion collections or shows.
John Fairchild is my guest. He's the publisher of the magazines Women's Wear Daily and W, and the author of the new book Chic Savages, which is about the fashion world. You coined the term Nouvelle Society. Compare Nouvelle Society to the old guard.
Well, Nouvelle Society, you've got to think in terms of people. I think the Nouvelle Society really began way back in Palm Beach with the Kennedys, when the Kennedys were not very much accepted by that Palm Beach crowd, and they suddenly, when Jackie got into the White House, it became very stylish to go to the White House. She became very chic. She became a fashion plate. Everybody wanted to know what she was wearing, as the president said. They were more interested in her clothes than in anything he was doing or saying. And it was true there for a while. So it's nothing new about it. It just is a word. It's changed starting out from the conservative group who were never seen or heard from before, and they're suddenly coming out in the world and want to be photographed. It's interesting how people today, even who are not stage stars, or even designers, society people, want to be photographed. They have the urge to be photographed. For example, business people like Donald Trump, his wife, Ivana Trump, they get so much publicity. Every time she buys a new dress, everybody rushes to photograph her. Every time she has her facelift, it makes front page news. It's a new world we're living in. I'm not one to criticize it, but it's part of the greed that richness of the Reagan era. By the way, I think it's ending. It's coming to an end. We are now saying that we have watched what's going on, particularly in New York. These people are retreating into a more softer stance. We call it soft society.
What do you mean by soft society?
Well, they're quieter. They aren't wearing the jewels to the opera like they used to. They are waking up to the fact that, you know, in a city of like New York, and you know what it's like, people have to be, we have serious problems. And to get dressed up at night and to go out in a big stretch limousine, it's got to make anybody feel a little bit funny. You just don't feel right about it. I think that this group of Nouvelle Society are getting more conservative. They're getting quieter and they're softer.
How have the parties changed that you've covered and attended over the years?
Well, I don't go to too many parties myself because I don't have the energy after I work all day. I'd say they've gotten bigger, with more flowers, better food, more dresses, more jewels, more people, and all of these parties has become a charity party. They're all for charity. It has nothing to do with people dress up for them, but the money eventually does end up and for a good cause, and I think that's fine. But we see that even these parties, people are getting tired of them, and they're retreating to more into their homes and giving quiet parties.
You write that anyone with enough money and stamina can become an overnight sensation. Give me some examples with people who you feel, you know, have kind of bought or pushed their way into celebrityhood.
Well, I think if you take all of New York society, I didn't say they bought, but some of them do hire PR people to get their names in the paper. I suppose that's a form of buying your way to get attention. Some of them call up and say, well, we're giving a party, and would you like to come and photograph us at the party? I think the Trumps are a living example of that. Every time they turn around or move, there's something to do with PR. They're photographed every place. You see so many pictures of Donald Trump on the covers of magazines. Every time she does something at the plaza, we hear about it. It's all written about. I think that's a very good example of what's happened.
How much do you feel you play into that?
That's a good question. We have a tough time sometimes. They're exciting people. I mean, getting back to Trumps. She's an interesting woman to talk to, and we play into it. And when she called up and said, well, would you like to come down to Atlantic City in my helicopter, when she was running the thing in Atlantic City, and see how I work and how I run the hotel? And we fall into it because we write about her, like everybody else. The thing is to find people who don't mix or don't want all this, who are interesting. There are a lot of people who are very interesting, but just don't want to have part of it. They still are some that are very quiet.
Do you find yourself ever having contempt for some of the people who are written about in your magazines? It seems to be a kind of world where there's just a lot of backbiting, a lot of cattiness, and I guess that's part of, you know, the, quote, fun of it all.
Well, I can't say it's fun in a way, but that's why the title of the book, Chic Savages, because it's sort of a tribal dance. They're in the jungle. Each one is trying to do something better than the other. They're a very competitive society, just as the designers are very competitive, just as businessmen are very competitive. But individually, when you sit down and talk to them, you can't have contempt for them because they're nice people. You like them. It's when they all get together and they're herded into a restaurant like Le Cirque in New York on Park Avenue, and you see them performing, and you see them wanting to have the tables on the right, and then they throw a scene if they haven't got if they're stuck in the middle or on their left. Then you sort of think, I think it's not contempt. I think it's a bit silly. I mean, you know, there are other things that are more important in life. However, as a reporter, and I suppose I've been accused of being cynical and mean, it's great fun to write about it, and that's why I did my book.
We were just talking about fashion parties, celebrity parties, chic parties. And that brings to mind a word. I'm not sure if you coined this one or not. Walkers?
Yes, I did.
Define it for us.
Well, you know, when men work hard all day, and they have a very energetic wife who likes to go out wearing evening clothes and being dressed up, and she goes to the hairdresser and ready to go at night when he comes home, and they're tired, they have to have somebody to take them out. So a walker is nothing more than an escort. Some of these walkers are at lunch with these ladies. Jerry Zipkin, who used to always be with Nancy Reagan and still is, and now he's switched over, he's with Ivana Trump. We have a lot of them in New York who escort ladies because the husbands just don't want to go to all these boring parties. Husbands have other things to do. They like to have a break from it all. So that's what a walker is, an escort. Male escort.
What do the walkers do besides escorting women to parties?
I don't think much. I think they do very little. I think they just charm them, talk to them, tell them how they look. They don't even hold hands.
What I mean is, though, what kind of work do they do?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Is that they're like professional social people?
That's right. They're professional social people. They have good manners. They're usually educated. Well, I can't say some of them don't. Some of them work. One of them in particular is very intelligent. Is a favorite, John Richardson. He's an editor and a writer, and he's doing the big book, three volumes on Picasso. But all the women like him because he's amusing. Basically, these walkers are sometimes much more amusing than their husbands. They have something to talk about. They're interesting. Some of them. I'm not saying all of them.
Did the men who you defined as walkers get very offended by that word?
Oh, no, they like it.
They like it?
Oh, they like it. I went to a lunch for Nancy Reagan on Sunday in the country, and a lot of the guests there were the walkers, because they're more amusing than the husbands. They amuse the ladies. They sort of talk like the ladies. They talk on the level of women. They know about what everything's going on. They gossip. They know about money. One of them is a big banker on Wall Street. He handles he's Greek, and he handles Ann Getty's money, and he's a very, very popular walker.
Fashion victims, another expression you came up with?
No, that belongs to the designer by the name of Oscar de la Renta, who was sitting in a restaurant with me one day, and he looked around the room and he said, "My God, look what we've created," meaning he, the designer, and other designers. "Look how awful the women look in these clothes." What he meant was that the clothes were running away with the women and dominating them, and if they dressed more simply, they'd look much better. After all, fashion is clothes are just nothing like a good meal to be enjoyed. When you look at a woman, you don't look at her clothes right away. You always look at her face, her eyes. It gets to be a boring subject to say, well, so-and-so's wearing Chanel, or so-and-so's wearing Valentino.
Any women or men who you think of as being fashion victims?
Oh, all of us at certain times. I remember one day I came back from Tokyo and I had on a raincoat which was supposed to be worn inside out, and I arrived in the office and three people said, "You're a fashion victim yourself." We all are from time to time. Why not? It's fun.
John Fairchild is my guest, the publisher of Women's Wear Daily and W, and the author of the new book, Chic Savages. John Fairchild, one of the things that you've become known for in publishing is the in and out lists. How did you start writing those?
We started writing it because we didn't have anything to write about one day, so we were sitting around the office and we were saying, "Oh, well, that movie is in, everybody's going to see it. Fish is more in than beef because people have stopped eating beef." And we sort of played a game in the office, about six of us. And now we got stuck with this damn list. We have to do it every year, and twice a year. And it sells newspapers. That's the truth. It sells newspapers.
Do you ever find them a little absurd yourself, even though you helped put them together?
I find that it's a game. It's like the game of snakes and ladders. It's as you played as a kid. It's like Monopoly. It's just a game, because at the end we say the people who made up this list are totally out, meaning they're totally out, wacky, crazy. It's just a game. It's not to be taken seriously. I think our readers now are pretty sophisticated a lot. There's some of them much smarter than we are. Laugh at it.
You know, I have often found that men in the fashion world have a view of women as being these mysterious creatures with unfathomable tastes and so on. I just want to quote one paragraph from your book. I think it's a mild example of this. You write, "Frankly, I don't believe that sterile fashion will take over. Real women don't want blue Mao jackets and baggy work pants. They want to be different, savagely competitive, to keep ahead and to capture their man. And the creative fashion designers, even though they are almost an endangered species, will survive because women will still want to look great, or at least better than the other woman."
I believe that. I don't take it back. I do believe it. I believe women... That's the challenge, is that a woman is basically trying to please a man or be with a man or be with somebody who amuses her, and she wants to look nice. A man wants to look nice too. We feel better when we look great. That's why I say fashion's a noble profession. It's not an art. It's not a sub art. It's just a craft. But the fact is that designers can make people look attractive is fine. I mean, I think it should be defended. It's a noble profession. And I think women, everybody wants to look nice. So why shouldn't one woman look better than another? Why shouldn't they be competitive in that sense?
You say that a lot of designers are worried about anti-fashion trends, that this is a problem that they have to find a way to cope with. What are some recent anti-fashion trends that have upset the fashion world?
Blue jeans. It's the biggest.
Well, they found a way around that.
They found that somebody put diamond studs or diamonds up the side of blue jeans, and that made blue jeans high fashion. I think the whole challenge of sportswear, the outdoor sporty look. But then the clever designers like Armani got around that. They brought those outdoor clothes, that California laid-back look, into their own clothes, so they overcame it. But that's sort of an anti-fashion trend.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is take anti-fashion trends and made them fashionable. Clever designers.
Mm-hmm. Whenever I talk to someone whose business is fashion or related to fashion, I'd like to know how they dress. How do you typically dress for work every day?
Oh, I typically dress in a gray flannel suit, a nice one, I hope. I love my neckties, and just a blue shirt, a blue and white striped shirt. That's it. Nothing else.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much for talking with us about fashion and journalism.
Well, thank you for having me.